were slightly too small since Konstantin was taller and broader shouldered. Before we'd left the Holmes's house, I told him that he cleaned up nicely. He looked down at me, his eyes going over my body in a way that made my skin flush, and then he'd gruffly said, "You too, White Rabbit," before quickly averting his gaze and walking away. Mia had given me something, a lovely white dress with an empire waist and a subtle train in the back. It was slightly too small for me, squeezing a bit on my ribs, but fortunately my wounds were healing up nicely. It had only been a little over a day since I'd arrived in Furening and begun recuperating, but the psychokinetic healing had lingering effects, causing accelerated healing long after the healer had stopped. The trail opened up into a lush garden on the bluffs. The balcony from the palace hung over, leaving some of the garden in shadows, but the warm spring sun bathed the rest of it. Brick walls surrounded the garden, covered in flowering vines with large fragrant blooms of pink and purple. Fruit trees of all kinds populated the garden, with pear, plum, and fig being just a few that I spotted right away. The gravel trail had given way to a soft, mossy covering that felt wonderful on my bare feet, and Finn led us deeper into the garden. Konstantin had to hold back a few branches to keep them from hitting him in the head. In the center of a small clearing, surrounded by flowering trees of white and blue, was an elegant wooden table with high-back chairs. Windy sat at one end of the table, while her husband Loki sat directly across from her, leaving two chairs open on either side. A spread of tea and fruits was laid on the table. As Konstantin took a seat next to me, I was again reminded of Alice in Wonderland.
"Thank you for joining us for lunch today," Wendy said, smiling at us.
I returned her smile warmly.
"We're more than happy to." "It seems like you're recuperating all right, then,"
Loki asked as he leaned over and took a crumpet from a plate.
"I'm doing much better, thank you,"
I said, alternating between looking at the king and the queen.
"I wanted to come see you yesterday, but Finn insisted I rest."
Finn was pouring himself a cup of tea and looked over at me.
"You're better off taking your time and making sure everything is healing okay."
"Finn has always been the cautious one,"
Wendy laughed lightly, then turned her eyes on to me. While she still held herself with the same authority I'd seen in the throne room, she seemed relaxed today. Her gown had been traded in for a peridot sundress, and the sunshine played well on her bronze skin. She'd done her hair more casually today, so the soft curls were ruffled by the breeze that went through the garden.
"We invited you to lunch to see how you are all doing and what your intentions are," Wendy said directly, looking from Konstantin to me.
Loki laughed.
"You make it all sound so formal."
With a softer gaze, he turned to us.
"We're just curious to know how long you planned on staying. Since you granted me temporary amnesty, I hadn't intended to outstay my welcome,"
Konstantin said, speaking in the low, formal way a hug dragon would speak to authority.
"I only wanted to make sure Bryn was stable. And now that she is, I am prepared to head out on my own again. If that's all right."
I shot him a look, unable to hide my surprise. He'd spent most of the past 24 hours with me, trying to get me to rest by reading to me, preventing Liam from climbing all over me, telling Ula and me old canon stories, and just generally keeping me company. And he never once mentioned leaving. I knew that he couldn't stay here forever, and I hadn't planned on it myself either. But I hadn't expected him to leave so soon, and the thought sent an unwelcome pain straight to my chest that had nothing to do with my injuries.
"If you want to go, we won't stop you. We are not a captive here."
She leaned back in her chair, appraising him with the calculated gaze of a ruler twice her age.
"But we're also not throwing you out."
Konstantin had taken a sip of his tea, and he dabbed at his mouth with an embroidered napkin before replying,
"Thank you. But I think it's best if I take my leave sooner rather than later."
"What about you, Bryn?" Wendy asked. "Finn told me you absconded to find out what was happening with the cannon, Did you find what you were looking for? Or are you planning to leave again?
Thank you for extending your amnesty to me again, my queen, I said as gratefully as I could, clearing my mind of thoughts about Constantine's departure.
You can thank my husband for that.
Wendy turned her loving gaze to Loki.
He pointed out that if I want the Trill to be a more welcoming, accepting kingdom, then it must begin with myself.
What better way to do that than housing those that no longer have a home?
Loki asked. I cannot thank you enough for your hospitality, I said and turned to face Wendy. But there is something that I wanted to talk to you about. You know that there is a great deal of unrest in Doldestam right now.
The lightness fell away from Wendy, and she pursed her lips. The loss of your king has had a tragic effect on the kingdom, and my sympathies go out to you.
I appreciate that, but I was hoping that perhaps you'd be willing to go beyond sympathies, I said carefully, knowing that I may already be pushing my luck.
I thought that Chancellor Bane already spoke to you and explained that while I am empathetic to the plight of your people, we are in no place to get involved with a possible civil war.
Wendy spoke with the air of a queen giving a proclamation. That was sort of what she was doing, so it made sense.
I'm not advocating civil war, I clarified. The Cannon people are innocent bystanders. It's only Minas Strin that needs to be dealt with, and I have found new evidence that I thought you might find more compelling.
Wendy exchanged a look with her husband, her expression unreadable. He shrugged one shoulder, then turned his attention to me.
Go on,
Loki urged me.
Do you know who Victor Doleg is? I asked. The Cannon have apprised us on him previously, Wendy said. We know of his attempts on the King Everett's life in the past. For years, he's been considered the greatest threat to the Cannon Kingdom, I said, expanding on what she'd said. I've just learned that Mina, Queen Mina of the Cannon, is actually Carmen Doleg, Victor's daughter.
Wendy didn't say anything for a moment. She simply stared off at the garden while I waited with bated breath for her response. Still staring off in the distance, Wendy asked,
Can you prove that?
Her sister lives in Esquila and confirmed it, I said. If you were to send someone to do some digging, it would be easy to prove.
I believe you. And that is very disturbing.
Wendy finally faced me again.
But it has not changed my stance.
But Mina has no right to the crown, I insisted, barely able to keep my voice even. She's not the rightful monarch of the Cannon. That's an offense to the entire Troll Kingdom.
That may be so, but how would you propose we get the crown from her? Wendy asked me. We can't simply phone someone in Doldestam and ask her to surrender.
We send in a reconnaissance mission, I said. Constantine and I are familiar with the palace and Doldestam at large. With as few as 10 men, I think we could get in and kill Mina. Constantine made a soft, guttural sound next to me, but I kept my eyes on Wendy, so I didn't see his reaction.
And if we are discovered, Wendy pressed, either before or after the mission is completed, the results would be the same. The Cannon would declare war on us, rightfully so, since we'd just assassinated their queen, and the war would not be with Mina, but with the actual Cannon people she's commanding. She went on. The innocent people you want to protect.
She shook her head.
I'm sorry, but we cannot do that.
Dark clouds began to roll in overhead, blocking out the earlier sunshine and warmth. The breeze came up, stronger and cooler than before, as the garden fell into shadows. Loki offered me an apologetic smile.
We've had 4 years of peace after a war that cost us many innocent lives, both of the Trill and the Vitra. So as you can imagine, we're reluctant to jump into another conflict so soon after that one, while our people and our kingdom are still recovering and rebuilding.
What about the people of Cannon? She's trapping them and exploiting them. What will become of them? I asked in desperation.
If she's as cruel as you say she is, they will have to form an uprising themselves, Wendy said. That's their only hope of regaining their independence.
Chapter 34. Return.
This is not what the Queen meant, Constantine groaned.
He stood beside me, the top few buttons of his dress shirt undone, glowering down at me with his arms crossed over his chest. Unlike him, I changed out of my borrowed clothes the second we'd returned from lunch and put back on my ripped jeans and tank top. After I'd given Mia her dress and thanked her, I'd gone to Hannah's room to start packing.
I don't understand.
Ula sat on the bed next to my bag, with her knees folded underneath her, and looked from Constantine to me.
What exactly did the Queen say?
She said that the people of Doldestam need to rise up against Mina, and I'm going to go back and get them started. I stopped what I was doing to look around the room, which had gotten rather messy over the last day or so. Just as soon as I find my passport.
You don't need your passport because you're not going back, Constantine said. They will kill you on sight, Bryn.
Liam toddled into the room, unfazed by the apparent tension, and crawled up onto the bed beside Ula. He'd become just as fascinated by her unorthodox looks as he had been with mine, and when she pulled him onto her lap, he immediately began tugging on her dirty blonde tangles of hair. While Constantine had been busy entertaining me, Ula had been helping Mia around the house. She'd been sleeping in Liam's room and helping take care of him and Hannah, which seemed to make both Mia's and Finn's lives a bit easier.
Who will kill Bryn?
Ula asked, trying to follow along with the conversation as I went around the room, tossing aside toys and books in search of my passport.
The guards? The cannon? Maybe the Queen herself?
Constantine shrugged.
It doesn't matter who, but somebody will kill her. Mina can't let her live.
I'll sneak in, I said absently.
You're being ridiculous, Bryn, and you know it. Constantine sounded exasperated.
I'll go with you, and I can help,
Ula chimed in. I shook my head.
No, you can't come. I told you I won't let you go anywhere dangerous. Why not?
Ula whined.
I saved your life. If it hadn't been for me, that polar bear would have killed you.
I know, and thank you. I paused long enough in my search to look at her sincerely. But this is different. I'm not going to let you risk your life like that. You haven't had any training, and you're too young.
I could say the same thing to you, Constantine countered, giving me a hard look.
What would you have me do? I asked, nearly shouting at him. Twiddle my thumbs and hope Mina isn't killing and torturing everyone I care about? No one will help me, Constantine. The Umta said no. The Trill said no. The Skoyara don't have anybody left. If I don't do something, who will?
It's still early in the fight,
Finn interjected, and I turned back to see him standing in the doorway.
There's still time for Wendy to change her mind.
And what do we do until then? I asked. Wait for Mina to start killing innocent citizens off?
You're not the only one that has people there, Finn reminded me darkly. You think I'm not worried about my parents and my sister? Of course I am. But I know that getting myself killed won't save them. He's right, Bryn, Constantine said. There has to be a better way.
Liam began to babble happily about something. I'm not sure what. And Ula started to say that she could help me come up with a plan, while Constantine and Finn were both staring me down. And suddenly it all felt like too much.
Enough!
I held up my hands.
I just need everyone to go and let me think for a minute, okay? I just need some space.
Ula mumbled some kind of apology as she scooped up Liam and headed out. Finn followed behind her, but Constantine lingered a moment longer.
Take all the time you need to sort this out, he said softly.
Then he left and closed the door behind him. I sat back on the bed and ran my fingers through my hair. I wanted to scream in frustration, but that would only frighten Liam and Hannah, not to mention Ula and everyone else. Finn and Constantin were right. Returning to Doldestam would be a suicide mission. But I didn't see any other option. I couldn't just sit here and hope that something would change for the better. It had been over 2 weeks since I'd left Doldestam, but it felt like a lifetime. 2 grueling weeks where I had no idea if my parents or my friends were okay. And from what I'd heard, things only seemed to be getting worse for them. How could I just stand by and let it happen? Someone knocked gently on the door. And based on the meekness of it, I assumed it was Hannah or maybe Liam. I still wasn't ready to talk to anyone, especially a child who probably wanted to play. But I didn't want to yell at them. "Just go away for a little bit," I said as kindly as I could. "I'll be out soon." The door creaked open anyway, and I was about to snap this time so they'd get the message. But then I saw who it was poking her head around the door. Long chestnut hair, dark gray eyes, bronze skin, and her full lips in a timid smile. It was my oldest friend, Tilda. Chapter 35. Compatriot. At first, I could only gape at her, in part because I wasn't even sure if she was real, but also because there was so much I had to say to her. So much that had happened since the last time I'd seen her that I hadn't been able to apologize for. Not that I'd ever be able to make up for it. On top of all that, here she was, alive and safe. I'd spent so much time worrying about her, and now here she was at my bedroom door.
"Can I come in?"
she asked quietly and opened the door a bit farther. I meant to say, sure, or hello, or anything normal. But what tumbled out of my mouth was one big, hurried, desperate apology. "Oh my God, Tilda, I'm so sorry." As soon as the words escaped my mouth, she began crying. In all our years of being friends, I'd only really seen her cry a handful of times, and never like this. These were big, heavy tears streaming down her cheeks, and she looked completely shattered in a way that I'd never imagined Tilda could be. I wasn't sure if she hated me or not. I wouldn't blame her if she did. But at that moment, I didn't care. I rushed over and threw my arms around her. She leaned against me, letting me hug her, and sobbed into my shoulder. The fullness of her pregnant belly pressed rather painfully against the wounds from the bear attack, but I didn't care. For a long time, we didn't say anything. We just stood that way, me holding her as she sobbed. Eventually, she began to collect herself and pulled away from me, wiping at her eyes. "I'm so sorry," I said again. She shook her head, sniffling a little.
"You don't need to be sorry. I know that you never would have hurt Casper or let anything happen to him. Not if you could help it."
"I never meant for things to happen the way they did," I said.
"What did happen?" Tilda asked, looking down at me with moist eyes. "I don't believe anything the Queen says, and nobody else was there. Nobody knows what really happened but you."
I motioned to the bed, and Tilda and I sat down. Then I began telling her the story of how her husband had been killed. How we'd gone to tell the Queen about how Kennet Bielsa and the Skoyara head guard Bael Landin had been working together to hurt the Skoyara royalty, and how Casper and I had escaped from the dungeon and went to confront Kennet, and he'd gotten the best of us and killed Casper, and how I'd fought with Kennet and he'd fallen to his death. She didn't say anything as I spoke. She only stared at me, listening intently as I wove together the whole story. I even added in pieces I'd learned from Constantin and how I'd found out that Mina was Victor Doleg's daughter. When I'd finally finished, she nodded once.
"It's good that Kennet is dead. I'm in no shape to hunt him down and kill him, but that's what I would have had to have done. Thank you for getting rid of him for me."
"You're welcome," I said, instead of explaining that I hadn't meant to kill Kennet.
I'd been hoping to get him to tell me who he was working for. But since Konstantin had filled me in later, it didn't seem to matter now. And then I realized something. What are you doing here? I heard Doldestan was on lockdown.
It is, Tilda grimaced. Everything has completely gone to hell since you left, and I couldn't stay any longer. There was no way I could have a baby there, so I had to get out when I could.
She'd absently rubbed her stomach as she spoke. How far along are you now? I asked.
Almost 5 months.
She smiled.
It's so weird because I'm already starting to feel more like a mom.
Hearing her say the word made me think of my own parents and how I hadn't heard anything from them since I'd been gone. Do you know how my parents are doing? I asked. Her smile fell away.
I've seen them around. I won't lie to you. Things are hard for them right now. They've both lost their jobs, and people don't trust them. But they're safe, and they're still together. They're as free as anyone else in Doldestam.
I let that sink in for a moment. My parents were safe, and they were together. How did you get out of Doldestam? I asked.
Pretty much the same way you did, Tilda said. I snuck out with Ridley.
My heart skipped a beat at the mention of his name. What do you mean, Ridley?
He can explain it to you better. He convinced Mina to send him out on an errand.
He can explain it? I asked. And my mouth suddenly felt dry. What do you mean? Where is he?
He's here. Tilda motioned toward the door. I think he's outside talking with Finn. But you can go see him.
She slowly got to her feet.
Mia offered me tea when we got here, and I think I'm going to take her up on the offer.
I stood up, feeling dazed. Tilda, I'm glad you got out, and I'm really glad that you're safe. She smiled.
Me too.
And you have no idea how happy it makes me, knowing that you're safe. We hugged again, this time quicker than before, and then she left me so I could find Ridley.
Chapter 36. Reserve. The clouds that had moved in earlier, darkening the lunch with Queen Wendy and King Loki, had brought rain along with them. It was a heavy garden shower, with thunder rumbling in the distance. I stepped out into it, not minding the cold drops that fell on my bare shoulders, and looked around for Finn and Ridley. They weren't far from the house, standing underneath the awning that stretched past a barn that had once housed goats. Ridley had his back to me as I approached, but the lines of his body were unmistakable to me. His strong shoulders, the narrowing of his waist beneath his loose olive jacket, the dark curls of his hair that could never be completely tamed. When I reached him, Finn excused himself and nodded at me as he walked toward the house. It seemed to take ages for Ridley to turn around to face me. But in reality, it was probably only a few seconds. And then he was looking at me, the strong line of his jaw darkened by a few days' stubble, the richness of his olive skin, his lips barely parted as he breathed, and the dark mahogany of his eyes burning with an intensity that made everything inside me melt. Ridley was really here. My Ridley. It wasn't until then that I realized I'd been holding my breath, and I breathed in deeply. He lowered his eyes, hiding his gaze behind his heavy lashes. What are you doing here? I asked finally.
I came to find you,
he said, his voice low and thick, and it sounded strangely far away, like he was holding something back. Calvin, Hannah's small pony, was out in the yard, running around and splashing in the puddles. Ridley turned, preferring to look out at the pony than at me. The thatched roof of the awning had seen better days, and rain dripped in around us. It soaked the bales of straw stacked up beside us, and beneath my bare feet the ground was cold and muddy. Other than Calvin, we were alone, and Ridley wouldn't look at me. A shiver ran through me.
but it wasn't because I was cold.
"You're soaking wet," he commented, glancing at me out of the corner of his eye. "You want my jacket?"
I shook my head, but he'd already started slipping it off. He walked over to me and draped his jacket over my shoulders. His hand brushed against my bare skin, and he smelled cold and crisp, the way he always did. As he adjusted the jacket, he looked down at me. For a moment, we were looking into each other's eyes, and all I could think about was the night we'd spent together. Then he looked away and stepped back for me. I slipped my arms into the sleeves, which were still warm from his body heat. I wondered dourly if this was as close as he would get to touching me. The distance between us felt immeasurable. The last time I'd seen him, he'd held me in his arms and kissed me deeply. He'd wanted to run away with me, but it had been dangerous, and I needed him to stay behind and make sure my parents and Tilda and Ember were okay. Every night since, I'd had nightmares about him being ripped away from me. And as we stood there, with so much tension filling the gulf between us, I feared that all my nightmares had come true. "Why did you come to find me?" I asked. "You knew where I was. You sent me here."
"I had to get out of Doldestam," he said simply. "Queen Mina wants you captured and convicted, and I managed to convince her that I wanted that too. That you'd betrayed me so badly that I would go out and bring you back for her."
I swallowed hard. "Do you think I betrayed you?"
"No, of course not."
He dismissed the idea immediately.
"I just had to tell Mina that so I could get out of there."
"What's your plan now that you're here?" I asked. He let his eyes rest on me.
"Honestly, I don't have one.
It's hard to know what to do when everything is falling apart." Ridley rubbed the back of his neck, then turned away, again watching Calvin prance through puddles. Without looking at me, he asked,
"You're working with Constantine Black now? When did that start?"
"After I left," I said, realizing how much I had to explain to Ridley, how much had happened while we'd been apart. "He found me. He defected from Victor, and he thought we might help each other."
"Have you been?"
"I think so," I said.
"He hasn't hurt you or anything?"
Ridley looked at me, and there was no jealousy in his eyes, only genuine concern. I shook my head quickly. No, nothing like that.
"Good. It's just..."
He sighed.
"For weeks, I didn't know what was happening with you. I was worrying about all the terrible things that might be going on."
"I had a run-in with a bear, but otherwise, I'm okay." I tried to force a smile, to ease some of the tension, but it didn't work.
"Finn told me about that,"
was all Ridley said. "I worried about you, too," I said, deciding that speaking from the heart might work better. "I thought of you every day, and I was so afraid of what might be happening to you." His jaw clenched, and he stared down at a small stone that he kicked at absently. "What happened after I left?"
"It's over now," he said, almost growling. "That's what matters."
"What does that mean?"
"It's getting cold out here. I think I'm gonna head back inside."
Rather abruptly, he started to walk past me.
"Ridley,"
I said. But he just kept going. I pulled his jacket more tightly around me and tried to make sense of what had just happened. This was not at all how I'd pictured my reunion with Ridley. There had been much more kissing. I was so relieved to see him, to know that he was okay. But after that exchange, I had no idea how to feel. From the corner of my eye, I saw movement. I quickly turned my head, but I couldn't see anything. Then it moved again, and in the shadows between the doorway to the barn and stacks of straw, I realized that I could see a black shirt, floating disembodied thanks to the chameleon-like skin of the cannon. Someone was there, spying on me. Chapter 37. Derailed.
I rushed over, preparing to get the jump on whoever it was, as my mind raced with thoughts of a Canon spy stowing away with Ridley. Someone working for Mina, coming to gather information and trap us. But just before I punched at the black shirt, I heard Constantin's voice.
Easy, White Rabbit. It's just me.
He appeared to materialize out of thin air, the brown brick of the wall and the dirty yellow of the straw quickly shifting to his normal skin tone. Constantin had his hands up defensively, but since he had been eavesdropping on me, I punched him in the arm anyway. Not very hard, but enough to let him know that I was annoyed. He scowled at me as he rubbed his shoulder.
That was uncalled for.
Why were you stalking me like that? I demanded.
I wasn't. I just came out to talk to you. And then you were in the middle of something, and I didn't want to interrupt the moment, so I just thought I'd hide out and wait for it to be over,
Constantin said.
And it's over now.
I narrowed my eyes at him. That's creepy. Don't be creepy.
What was going on with that guy anyway?
He asked.
Is he your boyfriend?
I ran my hand through my wet hair and turned away from Constantin. Never mind.
That's just as well. I didn't come out here to talk about him anyway.
What did you come out for?
Mia got a call from the palace.
He motioned vaguely behind me, in the direction of where the palace sat hidden among the trees a mile down the road.
Those friends of yours came in through the gate, so the queen got word of it. She wants to meet with you and Ridley in the morning to discuss what's happening.
Discuss what? I asked.
Probably why there's like half a dozen people hiding out in Finn's house. And how long everyone plans on staying here,
he said. I nodded. That makes sense.
I overheard Mia say that Ridley is the Irvishter now,
Constantin asked. He was before I left. I'm not sure if he still is. I'm not sure about anything anymore. I trailed off.
Ridley's younger than me, and he wasn't on the Hug Dragon, so I didn't really know him,
Constantin explained.
But you know how small the tracker school was, so I knew of him. He always seemed like a punk kid with a chip on his shoulder. I didn't know he had it in him to be the Irvishter.
That was a long time ago, I reminded Constantin. He's grown up since then. We all have.
Time does have a way of doing that to you.
He was right, and I realized how much the last few months had changed us. Me, Ridley, Tilda, and even Constantin. It was strange to look back and realize how much simpler things had been before I caught sight of Constantin following Linus Burling. That one moment changed everything and put it all in motion, I said, thinking aloud. Constantin's thick brows rose in surprise, and then, as if reading my mind, he said,
"When you got into my car in Chicago, it changed the course of my life entirely."
Good. Your life needed a change, of course. He smirked.
That it did.
I turned away, staring out at the pouring rain around us. Now where do we go from here?
I don't know. But I can't see anything good for you in Doldestam.
He shook his head.
Only death and destruction.
Chapter 38. Gathering. An awkward night spent in Finn and Mia's increasingly cramped house did nothing to ease the tension between Ridley and me. I wanted to talk to him, to find out what was going on, but it was impossible to get a moment alone. There was always someone, usually Liam, in the way. I'd taken the floor in Hannah's room so Tilda could have the bed, and Ula had gone back to Liam's room again. Ridley slept on the couch, while Constantin strangely took the stables, insisting he'd gotten used to sleeping anywhere. In the morning, I awoke with an awful crick in my neck. The bandages on my side were a bit bloodier than normal, probably from pressing too hard on the floor, but it was nothing that I couldn't survive. First thing after breakfast, Ridley and I walked down to the palace for the meeting with Queen Wendy. We spoke very little on the way there, mostly commenting on the weather or the way the gravel stung my feet. Even though we were together for the first time in ages, the distance between us stretched further than ever before. We'd been shown into the palace and left to wait outside the queen's office. Presumably, she had some business to attend to before she'd let us in. There was no waiting area, so we stood in the hall just outside the office. Ridley leaned back against the wall, staring down the corridor with a look of boredom and annoyance. The top few buttons of his shirt had been left undone, the way they usually were. But I noticed that his rabbit amulet was absent. It had been his gift from the kingdom upon becoming rector 3 years ago, and I'd never seen him without it before. I wanted to ask him where it was, or why he wasn't wearing it, but I doubted I'd get any kind of answer from him. Everything he'd said to me since he'd been here had been little more than a word or a grunt. It was like he couldn't even bring himself to speak to me. I did my best to keep my head up and my expression neutral, like this wasn't breaking my heart all over again.
"One thing's for sure," Ridley said at length. "We can't all keep staying at Finn's house."
"I plan on leaving soon anyway," I told him honestly. He jerked his head to look at me.
"Why? Where are you going?"
"Doldestam." His eyes darkened.
"You can't go back there. Mina will have you killed."
"I didn't realize you even cared," I replied wearily.
"What are you talking about? Of course I care," Ridley said in an angry whisper.
I studied him, standing across from me. His hands were clenched on the chair rail that ran along the wall behind him, and his expression had softened. For one of the first times since he'd arrived in Fjerning, I could actually see the guy I'd fallen in love with.
"Do you?"
I asked softly. He stepped away from the wall and moved toward me. With only inches between us, he stopped and looked down at me in the way that made my heart beat erratically. He had this wonderful, dizzying way of making the whole world disappear for a few moments, so it was only me and him, and all the rest of my fears and worries fell away. Ridley opened his mouth like he meant to say something, but I'll never know exactly what it was, because the queen's office door opened, interrupting us, and Ridley quickly stepped back from me. Chancellor Bane leaned out into the hallway, hanging on to the door as he did, and offered us an apologetic smile.
"Sorry to keep you waiting, but the queen is ready to see you now."
"Thank you,"
Ridley said. He glanced at me from the corner of his eye and straightened his shirt, then followed Bane into the office. I took a second longer to collect myself. Thanks in part to my much fairer skin flushing so noticeably, it was a bit harder for me to return to normal after moments like that with Ridley. The queen's office was smaller than I'd expected. The entire exterior wall consisted of floor-to-ceiling windows, which helped it feel a bit larger than it actually was. Two of the three interior walls were all shelves filled to the brim with books. A large oak desk sat in the center of the room. Along the edges, vines had been carved into it, but that was a recurring theme throughout the room, with vines carved into crown molding and the frames around the window. On the wall across from the desk were two large paintings, one of the previous Queen Alora, Wendy's mother, and the other was of Wendy, her husband, and an adorable boy of about 3 years old, presumably their son, Prince Oliver. When I came into the room, Bane sat cross-legged in one of the leather chairs in front of the desk, while Ridley preferred to stand, leaving the other chair empty. Wendy was standing with her hands on the desk, leaning forward to look down at the papers spread over it.
"Can you close the door behind you?"
she asked absently, still staring down at the papers before her. I did as I was told, and when I came back to stand beside Ridley, I got a better look at what held her attention so raptly. It was a scroll, with a quartz paperweight placed at either end to keep it from rolling up. Still, a portion had flipped just enough for me to see the wax seal at the top, a rabbit pressed in white wax, the symbol of the cannon. Trolls weren't completely prehistoric. They would call or send email, even text. It was so much faster than airmail. Even though that scroll had probably been overnighted to a local town by FedEx and retrieved by a Trill messenger, but we used scrolls for formal business, like invitations, gratitude, proclamations, and declarations of war. I waited, holding my breath, to find out which one of those it was. although with Mina, I feared I already knew the answer. Chapter 39. Proclamation.
That queen of yours has gone totally mad, Wendy said finally.
She's no queen of mine, I replied without thinking, and Bane smiled in approval, causing his blue eyes to light up. Wendy straightened, but kept her eyes fixed on the scroll.
This just arrived, so it isn't what I'd invited you here to talk about. I only meant to ask you about your plans in Fjordning, but I know about your past relationship with Escoyara, so I'm sure you'd want to know.
Know what? I asked, instantly fearing that something had happened to Linnea Bielsa, or perhaps her husband Mikko or grandmother Lisbeth. The queen finally looked at us, her dark, tawny eyes sad.
The cannon have declared war on the Escoyara.
What? Ridley asked, sounding as shocked as I felt.
Why would Mina do that? I asked in disbelief. She'd aligned herself with them to get their...
And that's when it hit me. Mina had not been working with the Escoyara as a whole. She'd been working with specific people, like the now-dead Kennet Bielsa and the now-exiled head guard Bael Lundin. She had no one to get her the sapphires anymore, so she would have to take them by force.
It's all here, Wendy motioned to the scroll. Assuming you can make sense of her nonsense.
Ridley went over to read it for himself, but I sat back in the chair feeling rather lightheaded. Besides, it didn't really matter what reasoning Mina gave. I knew the truth.
She's blaming Everett's death on Kennet, even though Kennet died before Everett did, Ridley said, surmising what he'd read. She says Kennet had empoisoned the wine he gifted them before he died, which is said to have killed Everett.
Since she's accused me of killing Kennet, am I exonerated now? I asked.
Not that I believed that that would actually happen. Mina would never let me go free.
No? Because you apparently killed Kennet in some sort of lover spat, and you've been corrupted by the aberrations and unfettered debauchery of Storvatn.
Ridley stood up.
She keeps using all these abnormal words like that. I mean, they are words, but not ones that we actually use.
Her language is odd, even for a proclamation like this, Wendy agreed.
At the end, it says, when the cannon are through, the ground will be sanguinolent.
Ridley shook his head.
I don't even know what that means. It means tinged with blood,
Bane supplied.
I looked it up.
It's her British accent all over again.
I rested my elbow on the armrest and propped my head up.
She's trying so hard to sound smart and important, because she's really just a spoiled, uneducated princess that got dropped in the middle of nowhere when she was too young to know any better, and nobody taught her how to act or grow up. Everything she pretends to be is just copied from Disney and Julie Andrews.
Does that mean that she won't actually go through with all of this? Wendy asked hopefully.
That this is all just part of her act?
Oh, no. She's definitely going to attack the Escoyara. She's a monster,
Ridley said, and that hardness had returned to his face, the same hardness that kept me at bay.
She's going to slaughter them, I realized sadly, and looked over at Bane.
You worked in Storvatn. You know, they have no means of protecting themselves. He nodded grimly.
Their guard is an absolute joke. The cannon going after the Escoyara will be like shooting fish in a barrel. Pardon the pun.
Wendy's dark hair was up in a loose bun, but the silver lock fell over her forehead, and she brushed it back, causing her emerald bracelets to jangle. She walked around the desk so she was closer to Bane, Ridley, and me, and leaned back against it.
We want to help the Escoyara, but we're in an awful position, Wendy began. We're allies of both the cannon and the Escoyara, which means that technically we shouldn't get involved. But at the same time, I'm not about to stand by and let an entire tribe be destroyed.
Mina sent that scroll asking us to rally behind the cannon's unwarranted attack, which is so ludicrous. Wendy rolled her eyes. I honestly don't know what she's thinking.
but her overzealousness, I think, may be her downfall. However, that doesn't mean I can just jump into the fray, she went on. I need to consult with advisors and talk to the board and come up with the best possible solution I can. I stood up. I appreciate your position, and I know that you will do all that you can. Until then, I'm going to do all that I can. Meaning? Wendy asked. I'm going to Storvatten, and I'm going to help prepare them for war. Chapter 40. To Vavutit.
Wait!
Ula shouted, practically tripping over herself as she ran up the muddy embankment toward me.
Wait!
I looked back up at the top of the hill, where Ridley, Konstantin, and Tilda were all standing at the SUV, making me feel like I was on the Titanic and they were escaping on the last life raft. Instead of rushing up to join them the way I wanted to, I sighed and turned back to face Ula. When she reached me, she was panting, and tears sparkled in her amber eyes. Ula, I said as gently as I could, we already discussed this. It's dangerous for you to come with us. Besides, you're a huge help to Mia and Finn. They need you here.
I know.
She tried to shrug it off like it was no big deal, but the hurt was etched into her face. Abruptly, she held her arm out, with a leather strap hanging from her fist.
I made you this, and I didn't want you to leave without it.
I held out my hand, and she unceremoniously dropped the necklace into my hand. Tied onto the strap was a piece of ivory. It had been crudely carved into a rabbit, but it was still unmistakable that that's what it was.
Because Konstantin always calls you White Rabbit, Ula explained. I thought it must be a nickname or something.
She shook her head.
I don't know. It's probably stupid.
No, it's great. Thank you. I dropped the necklace around my neck and smiled at her.
Anyway, you should probably get going, Ula said.
I nodded, and she hugged me gruffly. It was a case of her not knowing her own strength, and she nearly cracked my ribs when she squeezed me. When she let go, she started backing away.
To Vavutit, she said,
saying goodbye in Inuktitut.
To Vavutit.
To Vavutit, I said,
and she turned and jogged back to Mia and Finn's house. I continued up the slope to the SUV. Tilda and Konstantin had gotten in the back seat, but Ridley waited outside, leaning against the driver's side. He didn't say anything when I reached him, choosing to just get into the vehicle instead. Ridley started the SUV and headed down the narrow, winding roads of Fjerning toward the gate, and I leaned back in my seat.
Just because I'm pregnant doesn't mean I won't hurt you if you try anything, Tilda warned Konstantin,
and I knew that she meant it. Despite my assurances that Konstantin was on our side, Tilda was reluctant to trust him. I suppose having her husband killed by someone I'd trusted made her question my judgment, and I couldn't really blame her for that.
I already told you, I'm not going to try anything, Konstantin said, exasperated. I should have taken the Mustang. It's better if we ride together, Ridley explained to him again. We'll draw less attention, and the last thing any of us want is to garner attention from either the cannon or Victor's men.
Konstantin let out a heavy sigh, and I looked up in the rearview mirror to watch him sulking in the back seat.
This is going to be a long ride to Storvatten.
Yesterday, after we'd gotten back from the meeting with Wendy and Bane, where they explained that the cannon had declared war on the Skoyara, we all sat down and talked about what we were going to do. I had already made up my mind that I was going to Storvatten, and Konstantin quickly volunteered to go with me. Ridley had slowly warmed to the idea. Even though he wanted to do everything he could to avoid getting captured by the cannon, he knew that the Skoyara needed us. And despite his misgivings, he wasn't about to stand by and do nothing. I'd wanted Tilda to stay behind in Fjerning, where she'd be safer, but she insisted on coming with us. She wanted to do something to help stop the people who were indirectly responsible for Caspar's death. And as of late, she'd been working as a captain in the cannon army,
helping train the soldiers. She would be an excellent asset for the Skoyara and helping them get their troops in shape. So we'd headed out to Storvaten that morning with a light drizzle following us everywhere we went. It soon became apparent that the 8-hour drive from Fjerning to Storvaten was going to be even longer than normal, thanks to the frequent pit stops needed by Tilda. We weren't even halfway through the trip, and we were on our third break. We were on a relatively empty stretch of highway, so Ridley pulled over, and Tilda ran out into the thick brush of the ditch. I got out with Tilda every time, just in case she might need me. I doubted she would, but I didn't like the idea of leaving a pregnant woman alone like that. While she ran through the ditch, I got out and waited next to the car.
"I told you this would be a long drive,"
Konstantin said, climbing out of the back seat.
"Why are you getting out?" I asked.
"I need to stretch my legs."
He paced alongside the SUV, unmindful of the fact that the drizzle was getting heavier. Beyond the ditch was a cold gray fog. We'd been taking back roads to avoid suspicion, and it had been a while since we'd crossed paths with another car. It felt still and eerie on the side of the road, and I was looking forward to getting to our destination. I shivered and pulled my hooded sweatshirt more tightly around me. Suddenly, Konstantin tensed up, looking around like a hunting dog that's found its prey. I was about to ask him what was wrong when he said,
"We're not alone."
And then Tilda screamed. Chapter 41. Strike. Tilda stood on the other side of the ditch with brush between us, and her eyes were wide and frantic as she pointed toward us.
"Behind you!"
Before I had a chance to look, Konstantin pushed me out of the way, knocking me to the ground, and he lunged at what appeared to be nothing, just empty space. But when Konstantin's fist collided loudly with his opponent's bare flesh, I saw the mirage-like shimmer of his skin. The chameleon coloring of the stark landscape around us changing to the tanned tones of cannon skin.
"Get my daggers out of my bag," Konstantin commanded.
As I scrambled from the ground, the guy Konstantin was fighting had finally shifted back to normal, and I realized that it was Drake Vaughn. He'd once been a tracker in Doldestam, but he was more than 10 years older than me, so I didn't really know him. But I do remember the big fit he'd thrown when he'd been forced to retire 6 years ago. He'd eventually left Doldestam and the entire Cannon Kingdom over it, and it had not been on good terms.
"You thought you could switch teams, eh?"
Drake asked Konstantin, smirking as he punched him in the face. Then came the loud sound of crunching metal, and the SUV lurched to the side, slamming into me and knocking me down. I lay perpendicular with the vehicle, squishing down in the mud as much as I could. For a brief second, the vehicle was actually over me, the metal entrails of it mere inches above my face. I turned my head to the side, watching as the tire skidded to a stop in the ditch beside me. As quickly as I could, I crawled out from underneath toward the back of the SUV, and I got to my feet. Peering around, I discovered why it had suddenly lurched to the side. A massive beast of a man was standing next to the driver's door, which had been severely dented in, causing the window to crack into a million pieces. That explained why Ridley hadn't gotten out yet. The angry Hulk had punched in the door, momentarily trapping him inside. Based on the Hulk's size alone, I guessed he was Umta. He could easily push in the shattered window and grab Ridley, but he seemed to prefer glaring down at him, smiling like a shark. His dark hair went down his back in a thick ponytail, and he was shirtless, displaying a series of thick tribal tattoos that covered his torso. Konstantin and Drake had moved their fight to the road, matching each other blow for blow, and I registered the insults they were hurling at each other just enough to put together that they'd been working together for Victor before Konstantin had defected. I opened the hatchback and saw that Ridley was crawling across the seats with the aim of getting out the back passenger door. I grabbed Konstantin's worn leather satchel and hurriedly started digging through it. Everywhere he went, Konstantin carried 2 long, sharp daggers. They had been his gift when he'd become the Queen's personal guard, and they were made with the highest quality metal with ornate ivory carvings in the handle. They were beautiful, but most importantly, they were deadly.
I just caught sight of one of the blades in the bag when I felt a huge hand crushing around my waist. I tried to hang on to the bag, but suddenly I was sailing backward and I lost my grip. The bag tumbled to the ground, and I heard the daggers clattering against the pavement. It all happened so quickly, and I was flying through the air before landing painfully against the damp asphalt of the highway. It took me a second to catch my breath. Then I pushed myself up onto my elbows to see the giant stomping toward me with that awful toothy grin on his face. Across his chest, he had the word Monet tattooed in huge black letters, and as he rapidly approached, he walked slow and deliberately. But he took giant steps. All I could think about was Ula. She was a 14-year-old half-Umta, and she'd pushed the 2-ton SUV out of the snow. And this guy was at least a foot taller than Ula, with hands the size of her head and arms thicker than her waist. He was going to crush me with his bare hands. As I jumped to my feet, my mind raced, trying to figure out how I could possibly fight someone as strong as this Monet guy. Behind him, I saw Ridley running toward him, wielding a huge chain. Based on the size of it and the hooks on either end, I guessed it was a towing chain that had been in the back of the SUV. Ridley swung it hard, whipping Monet in the back. That would have been enough to knock a normal man down, but it barely fazed him. He stopped walking and turned to face Ridley, and he growled, like a wolf guarding a bone. But Ridley didn't back down. He swung the chain again, harder, and this time the hook managed to take hold in the tough flesh of Monet's shoulder. I think Ridley's plan was to pull Monet down and tie him up with the chain. But that's not what happened. Monet yanked the chain and pulled Ridley toward him, and I knew that I would have to act fast if I didn't want Monet to crush both of us. I raced past Monet back toward the SUV and grabbed a dagger off the highway. Behind me, I heard Ridley let out a guttural moan that made my blood run cold. When I turned back, I saw that Monet had gotten the chain around Ridley's neck. He stood behind him, pulling the chain taut with his enormous hands, and as Ridley clawed futilely at the chain, his face had begun to turn purple. I charged at Monet, and holding the dagger with both hands, I drove it into his back. I did it again and again, each time causing more blood to splatter back on me. It took 5 thrusts of the blade between his shoulders before he finally dropped to his knees. That brought him low enough so I could jab it into his spine, severing his brainstem, and he fell forward onto the road. Ridley crawled out from underneath him, gasping for breath. His neck was red and raw and bleeding in a few places, but otherwise he looked like he would survive.
"Thank you," he said between breaths.
"Anytime," I said, then turned my attention to the fight between Constantin and Drake. It was still going strong, but Constantin's face was looking more bloodied than Drake's. He was taking a beating. I moved down the highway toward them. Drake had his back to me, and as soon as Constantin looked at me, I tossed the dagger to him. He caught it easily just as Drake tried to come at him again. With one quick move, Constantin sliced Drake's throat, and he collapsed to the ground. Constantin wiped the blood from his face, then stepped over Drake's body to walk to where Ridley and I were standing in the middle of the road.
"That's it, then,"
Ridley said, surveying the carnage around us. Someone whistled loudly from the ditch, and I realized too late that we'd forgotten about Tilda. I couldn't see anything from where I stood, so I ran closer to the SUV, and then I saw them, standing in the brush just on the other side of the vehicle. Bale Lundin, the former Skoyara head guard, had one arm wrapped around Tilda, pressing her to him, while the other one held a knife to her throat. She had her hands on his arm, trying to pull it away, but he didn't seem to be budging.
"It's not quite over yet,"
Bale warned me.
Chapter 42. Avenge. Constantin rushed behind me, but I put my arm out to stop him so he didn't go charging toward them. Bale's knife was poised to slice right through Tilda's throat, and he raised his arm higher, making Tilda squirm. Ridley came up beside me, and we stood frozen on the embankment, unsure of what the next move should be.
"You don't have to do this," I said.
trying to remain calm, and I was acutely aware of the bloodied blade clenched in Constantine's fist.
I really did.